Hey, what's up? This is Jack from Book Royal, and you are listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Podcast is kind of like a—it's like a radio show that's not on the radio; it's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. Couple of notes for you. Got good news and bad news. The bad news, Chris decided to step down from the show. He's going to focus on things with his family. So he might show up, guest spots here and there, but be just me and some friends. And then for the good news, we got our 1 year birthday party coming up. June 7th, 11 to 5 at Steve's Hot Dogs in Tower Grove with Steve Ewing. Steve Ewing will be playing as a duo. We also got Zach Michael, Wade Trent, Sky Burnt White, Apollo's daughter, and Connor Lau all going to play acoustic for us. And there's a $15 hot dog buffet, so come hungry. And then but it's free for music. And also we're going to do it as a play it forward donation site for the day. So if you have any instruments laying around the house, feel free to bring them by, and we'll try to get them in the hands of somebody in need. So get to our guest today, sitting here in Westport Plaza with from Jack from Brook Royal. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you for having me.
And to my right is my friend Lance. Lance is going to sit in today and help co-host. And,
hello.
So welcome to the show, Lance.
Thank you.
So anyway, yeah. So I guess it's been, 2 years since the release of the last album?
Yes. Has it been 2 years? I had to think about that.
About a year and a half or so. But yeah, that's Cycles of Life and Sound. I listened to it just today. I actually listened to the whole catalog. And get me fired up for tonight. And it's an incredible record, man. I really dig it a lot. I like the way that, how you guys can seamlessly go from some hard and heavy hitting and then, like, to your kind of more, you know, ballads or whatever, you know, like something a little softer side I really like that you guys can have that versatility, I guess.
It's something we always wanted to have. We never wanted to be one thing or another. That's how we always ended up with some sort of digital sound on most of the albums, just to make sure that we could put something on there and someone isn't like, you know, what is that? You know, it's wanted it to always kind of be us and really be open to do anything that we wanted for the most part. And
right.
Just, you know, it helps stay diverse as a musician too, if you're able to branch into whatever you want. So, that's always been a goal. So I'm glad that it flows from one to the next.
Yeah.
Easy. So
yeah. What was it?
I have a quick question about it. You got some heavy hitters on that album that helped you out. Clint Lowry helped you from Seven Dust. For those of you that don't know, Dan Marsala from Story of the Year, Sully Erna, I think, from Godsmack helped you on it. I mean, I can kind of get maybe where you got Clint, where you got Dan, but how do you get Sully? Where's that come from?
Our management was friends with him and sent him, or actually, he sent him our stuff. I think that's what happened first. And in order to kind of try out to see if he wanted to work with us, we got to open up for them in Poplar Bluff. And that was kind of a, let's see if these guys, you know, are the real deal or anything. And we just went up there, and that was a blast of a show.
Yeah.
And just threw down as hard as we could, and it was pretty much right after that he was down to work with us, and then through that also helped us get to work with James Michael for some of the album too. So it was that was a bigger audition than I think we realized it was at the time. We just thought it was a really cool show to get, so we were excited to be a part of it, and that's kind of how it came about, and went from working with James to he offered to write a song with us, and so he and I worked on that here in St. Louis, and then a few of the boys, we flew up to Boston and finished it up in the studio up there, because he changes his mind all the time, so he decided it wasn't the right tempo, so he wanted us to come to Boston and retrack everything, and that's you know, how he ended up playing on drums on it and stuff like that, and after that he took us on tour. It was about as good as any label could ever champion you, having Sully say you're going on the road, that's it. Yeah. I'm gonna write a song with you, we're gonna do this. So just very lucky, I guess.
I've never been able to see them live, but I don't think a lot of people realize that how good of a drummer Sully is.
And God.
Yeah, he has his own kit that comes out and he plays for a while.
He's one of the best I've ever seen. I actually, when we were writing the song, I was playing guitar and he's playing drums, and I was supposed to be keeping time, and I just totally lost where I was at because I'm watching this guy just fly through the drums and just do everything, and I was just like, I'm sorry, man, I was watching you play. So can we start over?
Well, that's actually our heart of you guys was, they played like a rock star festival here, you know, one of those with the energy drink. And I think Lux was interviewing him, and he was talking about working on your album. And I'd heard your guy's name, but wasn't really familiar with the music. So I thought, well, I'll check these guys out. And then you guys did your you did a thing at CD Warehouse, where you had your album. And so that's when I first bought it. But that's kind of what turned me on, was Sully. So you see how it just kind of it can work for you.
Yeah.
Getting your name out there is not a bad thing.
It's a good person to have on your side.
Yeah.
You mentioned Clint also. I just heard his name pop up. I guess he just joined like a new super group of sorts with Adam from 3 Days Grace. Have you guys heard that yet?
No, I heard that.
Yeah,
I heard Adam was working on something, but I didn't hear Clint's name.
Oh, I didn't know Clint was in that either. I knew Mike Mushok was. But
yeah,
I knew her.
Yeah, Mike, and Clint.
And his little brother, I thought?
I think something like that. Anyway, yeah, they're I guess they're getting ready to release some kind of an album or something, and
sure, it'll be good.
Yeah, I think what they're calling it, Saint Asonia or something like that. However you pronounce that. But,
yeah, I'm sure Mushok's a beast.
Yeah.
So it's Adam's definitely a great singer. So
for sure. Yeah, I'm excited to hear him sing again because, 3 Days Grace is one of my favorites, and it was a bummer to see him step down and leave.
It's probably the best thing that he could have done. You know, he had to kind of get himself in order, you know, and you don't want to see anybody get too messed up.
Sure,
so you gotta step back sometimes.
Yeah. It's exciting to see maybe a new project that he's got going on.
Yeah.
Some new music coming out. So how do you, we mentioned Dan also being on that record. You just know Dan from the scene from years?
I've known Dan for so long, since high school, and we've all just played in bands together that we were working on the album. We put some screaming on It's Already Over, and we love that, so we're like, well, let's see if we can do a little bit more, and at that point we were pretty much ready to do whatever we wanted on the record, because we'd had so many people telling us, do it this way, do this, do that, and we were just like, no, we just want to do it our own way, and Dan was, you know, hey, will you come do this? Yeah, of course. So, it's been since probably junior in high school, I think, that we've known him and played in bands in St. Louis around and everything. So it's back when he was the drummer for Big Blue Monkey. So.
I didn't realize that he drummed also. And then, but he filled in for Johnny Venus on some of those Greek Fire stuff. When so that was... It's pretty interesting to see Dan back behind the kit. And
he's really good.
Yeah, no, it was great. I think it was that Point Fest that I remember one of them I saw in there. And that was, didn't realize that he could play drums, he's back there.
He definitely has the chops for sure. There's no question.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how some of those guys, they kind of become the front man of the, you know, like Sully also, and like, yeah. But where, you know, you kind of forget that they're multi-instrumental, you know, too. They can play a lot of different things, and you know,
I definitely have noticed a lot of guys, especially that, you know, it's you end up, myself included, end up being the singer because we want to make sure we have an animated show and that we can move around and give everybody a, you know, a great performance and stuff like that. And if I had to play guitar the whole time,
sure.
I'd just be in one spot. And there's bands that can really, really pull it off, but we really wanted to make sure we were constantly moving,
mm-hmm.
and so that the audience is just like, don't even know what to do because there's just so much, so much movement and energy and everything like that. So it's just only till recently have I started actually playing live, but for the get-go, that's what it was. And you know, I play a lot of different things, and it's just, you know, you just when you're around it that much, you just want to get your hands on anything you can. So
I think especially in rock music, for the live show, it's pretty crucial to have that, have you freed up to be able to run around and get the crowd amped up as well.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like if like another Greek Fire rip, like with Moon, you know, when he played guitar with Story of the Year, and he didn't, you know, he kind of, he did the flips and stuff, but like whenever he, now that he's the front man of Greek Fire, like he's always running around, he's climbing in the balconies and never, you know, crowd surfing and whatever, all the stuff that he's doing. And
that's a whole different kind of animal now.
But it brings so much more to their live show. It's just, I mean, it's infectious, that energy. You know, it's like,
it definitely helps that he's an absolutely incredible singer. So I mean, it's just to be moving around like that with a little soccer player energy and just still just crush those notes like that.
Sure, man,
the boy can sing.
Oh yeah, I'm excited to see. Like I was at the pageant when it was their family reunion show or whatever, the Story of the Year of Greek Fire, and Fuck Off and Dies, and they threw out that red couch or whatever it was, that, you know, they crowd surfing in the pageant on that. And
what a fun idea.
Yeah. But I remember seeing them, I got actually a picture, I think it was, I think it's Kenny Williamson's shot of
the Point Festival.
Yeah, Rock and Photo.
Yeah. And
I think that's up at, I don't know what it's called now, Verizon?
Yeah,
it's up in the back there.
That's what I've heard.
Such an amazing photo.
Yeah,
that was a great show.
Bought a copy from Walter over at CD Warehouse, and I got Moon to sign it, autograph it one day at a show, and so I got it hanging in my house now. It's pretty cool. It's a neat shot. But I'm wondering what they're going to do to, what Point Fest coming up in a little bit, what they're going to do to try to top that, or
never know. It's just to have a band of that caliber musically, and then to put on a show like that too is just like, man, it's just, you know, what, can't believe they're not just on the road 24/7.
Sure.
But they got plans, I'm sure. They've definitely been very smart about everything. So
yeah. So you know, you mentioned growing up with Dan and things, but like, who were some of the people that, you know, in the scene or even, you know, nationally that you looked up to that, you know, inspired you to get out there and do this?
Well, definitely, being in high school and the Story guys were, I guess they were Big Blue Monkey back then, but just seeing kids our age or a little bit older just doing it like that, it was pretty unbelievable just to see, even though, you know, we're pretty close to the same age, it was just like, well, holy cow, you know. And those guys from the get-go in the St. Louis scene set the bar, because their shows were so animated that it was either you try to do it too, or you're going to get out played every single time, because you can't hang with that. And it's just, I remember a lot of bands coming into town wanting to know why all these local bands were just so energetic live, and then the honest answer was, it was because Story of the Year. It's like, those guys just, I mean, it was almost acrobatic to watch, you know, a local band doing that stuff. It's like, well, you know, they're not going to be here very long, you know, they're gonna take off, there's no question.
Yeah.
But them, I mean, nationally, I mean, it was Deftones for sure. There was just, it was, that was pretty much it, you know. It's just once, you know, saw that in early Korn, it was, you know, I was going from listening to some grunge stuff and then just, I don't know, it's just the heavier it got and just having that kind of groove to heavier music like that. You know, like Pantera, literally, it started a lot of that, you know, I think they called that the money riff or whatever. I was like, well, why can't we just do the money riff the whole time and stuff, and just doing that you know, just them and Seven Dust, of course, is still to this day one of the, would put on the best live, one of the best live shows I've ever seen. So,
you got to see Deftones and Mastodon and Alice in Chains at Scott Trade Center one night. And
God, what a show!
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Man, I mean, we were like, you know, 10 feet from the stage on the floor, and it was. But it was intense, man. It was a heck of a show.
Deftones is one of those bands that, admittedly, I'm not a huge fan of, but I've seen them live, and I can't just listen to Deftones on an iPod or something like that, but seeing them live, they're unbelievable. I told a friend of mine who's a huge fan of theirs, I said, I totally get it. You know, once I saw them live, I was like, oh, to me it translates better. Like, some bands are better, I think, live than they are recorded, and that's just my opinion, but yeah, they're a phenomenal live band. I mean, I was just kind of like, Deftones. But then after it was over with, I was like, oh, my God. My buddy had seen them a bunch of times, too. And he's like, I told you they're really, really good live.
Yeah, that's there's something to be said about that, like, you know, you can make a great record, but to perform it live, and then sometimes there's some of that energy gets lost in translation with to be able to capture that on, you know, on a recording. But, you know, where there's always those bands that, like, are so much better live or so much better in the studio, but... You know, to be able to master both of them and stuff.
It's definitely hard to capture that live feel on a record. And it's, you know, there's some producers that have done it very, very well, and then there's, you know, there's been some that it's just kind of, well, it's okay, but the band just totally blows you away live. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's Deftones for me. I was all in on both of it. It was pretty much, I didn't know, you know, it was just hearing somebody sing like that and then scream at the same time. It was, you know, it was just...
I hear a lot of bands, though, that say Deftones, like when you ask for influence, these guys, you know, your style of music that are just like, it's Deftones.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big influence on a lot of people.
Yeah. Speaking of earlier, too, with the... collaborations, I wanted to ask, like, did you have a dream collaboration or who you would love to have worked with or still?
Clint's definitely up there because Seven Dust is such an awesome band. And I think that band is not been given the recognition that they really deserved, and they've done really well, but I just think they could have just they should have been so big, and because they just, you know, were road dogs, and were that first couple of albums they were touring nonstop, and it's just, and so good, you know, so I mean that definitely, he's up there, and I know for Jason, that's his idol. That's the reason he plays PRS guitars. That's the reason he's got certain effects that he has. It's because of Clint. So I know he was, sliding out of his seat on that one. But I don't know. For me, it's, I think it would be amazing to work with Jacoby, just because he's a guy that I've looked up to a lot as far as, he's a fearless singer. And just is so consistent every single night, no matter what, and it's just, I think it would just be awesome to work with the guy. So.
Sure.
He came back after that. He was here. You heard his vocal cords.
Yeah, I saw that show. He tried so hard to give him a good show.
He tried,
And it was like, kudos to him. That's a pro right there. But
he still came back and still sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, he's better than ever now.
They're definitely one of those bands that kind of like they had a huge run, and then they kind of, like, as far as, like, mainstream level, like, they maybe not have had the push with the label or whatever it is, but they're still, I mean, they're out there on the road and then cranking it out, and they're still selling out.
They made it through that, like, lull of and they kind of changed their image a little bit and a little bit of their sound, but it's still them, and they made it work. So, yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of bands that have been able to pull that off.
Sure.
But it's just, you know, to be around that long.
Those live bands that when you see him live, and he's running to the back of Riverport. Riverport to me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, wow, you see it live. And once again, as a translator, I was a fan before that, but once you see him live, you're like, whoa, that's
That's another band that's, you know, there's a reason they've had longevity is because they're just so good, and he's got to be one of the top front men out there. He just goes off. It's it's inspiring to see.
Sure. I don't know. I forget what it was.
Well, speaking of collaborations, not really collaboration, but I got to ask about the Bleed Blue. Was that the blues coming to you? We all know you're a huge blues fan. Or was that you coming? Was you making a song and the blues? Hey, look what we got.
We played at a game, and which was very weird but very awesome because we got free tickets to see the blues and. Which we actually shut out the Sharks at that game. And then we got to meet the president at the time. And super excited to meet him. And like the next day, he was really happy with everything. And prior to that, I had written Bleed Blue. And because we were just going to give it away for free. And because just, I mean, everybody knew we were big blues fans. People had kind of asked, you know, you should do a blues song, and you kind of don't know how you're gonna do that because you want to make it, you don't want it to be too cheesy, but you want it to still be a sound like us and be a heavy hitter. So it had been written, and then like the next day after we played at the game, he asked one of our friends, you know, the boys should write a song for the playoff run, and. And he just said, well, that's pretty funny because little do you know, I have one right here. Here you go. And he heard it and he said, okay, have him record it for real. And because it was just a home demo I'd done at my house. And so we went and did it. And Richie Crybomb killed that mix, man. It's pretty hard. So, and then there it was. It was on TV and stuff. So,
right, yeah, exactly.
It's, that was... that was pretty awesome just to be able to do that.
Sure. Did you, so you did, quite a bit of stuff out there with Rich, right? At Trailer?
Yeah. Most of the first album we did, the second album we did with Richie and another producer. And then we did some of the last album. We were, some of it was in Boston, some of it was in Nashville, and most of it was with Richie out at Trailer.
Sure.
So, but that's just, that's where we're comfortable, and Richie and I have been on the same page from the very beginning, so it's just awesome that it's just very comfortable to be working with him because he gets what we want to do, and for whatever reason, I'm much more open to hear his suggestions for sure because it's just there's a lot of trust there. So
he's done a lot of work with a lot of my friends in local music, obviously, around here, but it's like it's crazy to how many, like, great records he's been a part of, and I know he with the Cabo stuff and Shaman's Harvest, and he did our buddy's Hollow Point Heroes album, and but it's just like he's really good at what he does, and it's
definitely a talent to be able to actually like produce, and the biggest thing for us is there were so many. Recording studios that you can go to, but to have somebody sit in the room and actually produce and kind of sit down with you before and say, how are we going to do this? If you want to be really really produced, you've got to be open to suggestions and stuff like that, because there's a lot of times you'll run into people that might be just newer to it and kind of take offense to, you know, like, well, what is this part for? Or why is this part here? Well, I don't know. We just kind of liked it. It doesn't really have a lot going on with it.
Yeah.
We're getting rid of it. And, you know, that can piss some people off sometimes, but if you understand that it's for the greater good and that the end result is going to be really something that you're going to be proud of and just like, man, we really worked for this. You know, Richie's kind of that guy that helped a lot of local bands get a taste of that, like what it's like to really have somebody for a you know, big time skills for not big time money. He was he was putting that out there. I mean, that guy's worth a lot more than what they were charging for sure.
Sure.
He's a, you know, that's a you know, his talent's kind of gotten on a few records, but you know, that's another guy that definitely could have been on some massive things for sure. He can hold his own with a lot of people. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I'd love to get him on the show, and Scotty. I've been trying to work on getting him over here and tell some of those mesh stories and stuff, and or modern day Zero, which whatever you prefer to call them. But yeah, they. But yeah, I mean, I've been a big fan of those guys for a long time, and so it's kind of. It's glad to see that they're still like involved, like even maybe not putting out the records, but they're still involved in a lot of different aspects of the music scene and stuff. And Scotty managed the band for a while.
Yeah, for a long time. And it was kind of the you know, the team there. Scotty had the studio out there. Richie was doing great work, and it's you know, it was a big reason and. Helping us get, you know, recognition is, you know, just setting it up the right way of, you know, your approach and your launch to get things to the radio and all that. I mean, it's as much as you'd want to believe that you could just be playing a show and somebody would just walk in and that would be it. You know, it doesn't say it doesn't happen. But not so much anymore today. It's you know, the labels are way too afraid to do something like that. Yeah. So you know, they just definitely knew the biz to get it done the right way.
Yeah. I was thinking about with the album Cycles of Life and Sound, and like how did you guys do a lot of that writing? Like as collaborative, or did you write a lot of that stuff and just present it to the band, or
a lot of it? Yeah, I'm always writing, and it's just I don't know. It's just something I have to do, or I'm just kind of a jerk if I don't. So right. You know, I was writing so much, and. So, like, if I'll write something at home, which, like I said, I do quite often, and I'll send it out to the guys and say, what do you think about this? Do we want to work on this? Do we want to, is this something we want to do? I have a tendency to do a lot of pre-production at home, and so it's kind of, there's not a whole lot of things that aren't too finished, but, I mean, as far as, like, you know, top lines and leads and bass lines and stuff like that. I'm just putting in little dinky stuff for that or whatever. And you know, a lot of it I'll try to get a good foundation there and at least with you know, some of the stuff. And then you know, I mean, the boys, you know, will anything you have, just send it out. Let's hear it. You know, let's do whatever. And it's not a lot of everybody sitting in a room. Kind of writing a tune thing. It's been kind of weird in that aspect that and we have done that too, but it's not been a majority of it. And then some of the albums on Cycles of Life and Sound I had done with a few guys in Nashville, and that was more not really our cup of tea to be doing something like that, but if it's for the greater good, you know, of you know, getting some good experience, and as much as I wasn't too into like co-writes and stuff with somebody I'd never met, at the same time, if there's a guy that's a fantastic songwriter, I'm never going to say no, not to sit down in a room with the guy and just soak up whatever he's got. So it's almost every single time I would end up in Nashville working with a guy, I would come right back home to St. Louis and write another song. It was like, oh, that's pretty cool. He's learning, you know, I learned a lot of stuff there. It's like, well, I can do that. Let's try. And so it was almost every single time. But still, it's, you know, good experience to get to do that. And there were some guys I got to write with that I got a lot of songs under their belt that were pretty amazing.
That's the place to go if you want to write songs, because there's so many great songwriters in that town, and it's been a goal of mine, like, to go and just, you know, hit Broadway and hit all, like, the songwriter rounds and stuff, and
It's really cool.
And even for rock music, there's a lot of rock music people that go to Nashville. You know, people think it's just country, but
It was, especially when we were down there, it was really starting to boom down there for rock coming down and all that stuff. I mean, James Michael lived in Nashville, and he was an LA guy for forever. So it's to be there.
You know, Black Keys live there now, and a lot of guys are coming out of Nashville now. So it's
a good town. It's fun. Yeah. It's people are real nice to you down there. It's definitely good times, and honky talks are awesome. We love being in those.
Yeah,
definitely a newfound respect and love for country down there. Just people are extremely nice to us.
Sure. So in the song, like Raise a Glass, that's pretty much just a kind of a tribute to the fans, right? Like,
that was, I wanted to thank our friends and our family that have, we've been playing music for a long time, and there's been a lot of the same people that have come out and seen us play for a long time. Like, and I know your family will and stuff like that, but I mean, they've had to go through, a lot of, mama, can you do my laundry? I don't have enough, barely making rent and stuff like that. So we just wanted to put a song on there that was just this is a thank you. I don't know how to thank you, but this is the only way that we know how to do that, is to put a song for you on the album. And that's, I love that song. We're working on that one with the chorus on that one was originally a bridge, and I was playing it for Bond, and he's like, that's it. Like, that has to be the main part. So we ended up switching it around a little bit, and it came out really, really well. So.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. I love, Teeth and Jump and stuff. But I also like that you they can show the kind of a softer side on some of those tracks, like Raise a Glass and stuff. So, but yeah, that's a fun record, man. I don't know.
Let's talk about Blues Hockey. Or do you want to talk about Blues Hockey?
Well, I'd much rather talk about if they're still playing.
Yeah, okay.
But
I think a lot of people got real excited, and because it was
I try not to get overly excited. Yeah. I do every single year.
Yeah.
and was the same result, but I still think, I still have faith it'll happen. And,
yeah.
No matter how frustrated I may be, what the result is, I'm still going to be just as excited coming next year and stuff. So
yeah,
it's I don't know. I think there's may end up being some trades though. I think that's inevitable.
Well, they may have a mutiny amongst the fans of certain people. I hear, you see a lot of stuff on social media. Casual hockey fan, I'm more of a playoff fan than I am of a regular grind season fan, but I got a lot of friends that are die hard, and they'll blow up my Facebook during a game, especially just a lot of expletives, about this person needs to go, and if I got to see him on the ice one more time, so definitely a lot of people want some changes.
Yeah,
just want them to play playoff hockey. That's the most important thing. Be so good in the season, and it was not the same team really out there. I can understand many fans' frustrations with that. So it's hard, but we still have faith. There's no question. It will happen in my lifetime. It will happen.
at least they're getting there. That's the thing. Even with Cardinal baseball, they've won a lot of championships, but they're. It's fun that they're at least always getting to the playoffs and things. We're making a run at it. I mean, might not, obviously, only one team's going to win, but the championship. But it's at least that's something to be said. Though they're in the hunt of it a lot of times.
What was it like? Was it 25 years in a row that the Blues made the playoffs, and then we had that spell where we weren't in it for a while, and then we were back. We had the record for the longest of being consecutive in the playoffs or something like that. And we weren't for several years, so I guess. You always, what have you done for me lately, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Sounds like that's the St. Louis fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I never got into hockey. I had friends and family that were big into it, and growing up, I got into playing football and basketball, and so I watched a lot of that. And then after Jordan left basketball, I pretty much quit watching basketball, watching pro ball at least. I watched some NCAA stuff, but even that, like now, I hardly watch any football anymore. And I watch a little bit of baseball, but I'm usually trying to go to as many live shows as I can. That's where my passions are.
Hockey Live is where it's at. I mean, there's no better sporting experience, in my opinion, than watching a Blues game live.
Oh, yeah.
While you're there.
That's probably something. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I hear a lot of that, and I probably should just go down and do it, like, even though I don't really have, like, a huge passion for it, but like just if I go experience a live, maybe it'll change my mind.
Especially if you get to see a good game when there's a couple of fights and some really good goals, and you just see, you really can understand how skilled those guys are when you see how fast they're moving, and it's just some of the stuff like Tarasenko can do, and the speeds that he's doing it at, it's just like, shouldn't even be possible.
I think that's what bothers me, is like how it translates to TV, because it is very quick, and like how fast the puck moves and how small it is, it's like a lot of times for me it's hard to see it on TV, to follow. So it's like, maybe if I went and actually sat there and enjoyed the game.
Definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I got to give me one of those, like, all-inclusive box seats or something. Like,
yes.
Eat a bunch
of
food.
That's the way to go.
Yeah. I was going to, you been to any movies lately?
Movies?
Yeah.
No. I used to go to movies pretty frequently on the road because don't have a lot else to do.
Yeah.
But
I went to check out this movie. I think it's Ex Machina.
The robot, or whoever she is.
Yeah, it's like a artificial intelligence kind of thing. Like this guy builds this robot and. It's pretty wild, man. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of, I think it's more of like an independent, but it's been building steam now. Like it's I think the guys that did like 28 Days Later and stuff. So it's kind of got some of that like suspense to it, like some of those. I watched that the other night. That's a fun movie.
Most of the times, if I'm going to watch a movie, it ends up coming on demand.
Yeah,
and then I'll rent it there. I'll just end up getting all sorts of angry if I like pay to go see a movie and somebody's screaming the whole time or something. It's just like, I think the last movie I took was probably my kids, my daughter, and that I don't even remember. Madagascar 3.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was.
I went to see the SpongeBob movie. It was the second Sponge Out of Water. I enjoy those. I mean, even though I don't have the children to take to the movies, but me and my wife, we enjoy those movies. A lot of those are, that's what's fun, at least now they're making children movies that are also can be more enjoyable for adults. But there's some of that, like there's a lot of really funny like jokes that like are in those movies that go way over kids' heads and like that are, you know, the adults will get and stuff, especially like movies like Shrek and stuff like that. So I think that's what makes those movies as successful as they are. And I went to go see that Avengers 2 the other day. Also,
but it's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I probably will go see.
Yeah,
I just haven't yet.
There was a lot of little ones there for that movie, and they all love all those action heroes and stuff, superheroes, and but I don't know. There's some things like, I don't know that it was always really appropriate for kids. I know there's like, you know, not a, like a lot of curse words and things, but it's just like, I don't know that that's really like a great movie to. For some of the, there was, you know, some of them, 4 or 5 or whatever, these little bitty ones there. But I guess as long as their dad says it's okay, then.
I remember going to see South Park.
I was raised on Porky's and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'll probably go see the new Mad Max. I've always been
yeah.
like a well, the Road Warrior, I guess. This is the second one, I guess.
Yeah.
In the desert one, not the first Australian one, but I think it was Road Warrior. No, Mad Max, and it was Road Warrior.
Yeah.
I want to see that new one. Like, just from the previews, it's just, I mean, my heart's you know, racing by the time it's over. I'm like, that looks unbelievable. Because I don't go to movies a lot because people piss me off. Like I say, if I go to a show, a concert, people are bumping into me and I'm in a pit. You know, that's all me for being in a pit. If I'm sitting there and a person next to me is repeating every line or crunching her popcorn, it just drives me nuts. I'm like, I paid $12 for this, man. Shut up.
Right.
So I'd just rather see it at home with a controlled environment.
We've been going a lot, like Saturday and Sunday mornings. You can go to like the show, and it's like $4 a ticket. So that's a.
I think Warrenburg's doing like a $5 Tuesdays or something. Yeah. Like that. I'll probably go see Mad Max on that.
Cheap. Right. That's what I mean. But yeah, like tickets, are, like you said, $12 a show. Whatever. Or 15 sometimes. So if you want to like the 3Ds and all that, like it can be an expensive date, you know. But yeah, I want to see that. Then I also had a trailer for on that Avengers for Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
They're redoing that. So that looked pretty entertaining.
They're redoing Fantastic Four again.
Yes. Yep. Rebooting it again.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man. It's like it just.
I guess that's true.
And they got all new cast. It's got that kid, Miles Teller. He's Mr. Fantastic. He was in Whiplash as the.
He was in the Footloose remake.
Yeah. He's. Anyway, he's a talented young
Michael
kid.
Michael Jordan, I think that one is. He's not the Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
The new Michael Jordan.
Right. But yeah, that looked fun. Another big summer, you know, superhero movie. Speaking of the band again, I noticed that when I was browsing through doing my homework today, and I hit the website, and it said on their new music coming soon. Is that still true, or?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a catalog for it.
Yeah.
I want to say, well, I know for the last album, there was probably 40 songs that could have gone on the album, which is how we ended up with, like, whatever it was, 14 on it. And there's still some that didn't make it on that one that we would like to see. I don't know that we'll do another full length again. If we end up entering the studio again, you know, we'd like to do something, and it's definitely there. I don't know when that would be, or if it's going to be, you know, we'd branch out and, you know, some other projects and stuff like that too. And
sure.
You know, Vaughn's got a Hush List, and Jason for a while was. Helping some of our buddies out, and was doing some guitar for Yak Boy Fresh, and I've got lots of other projects that are not Brookoil that I just do because I like writing music, and so I don't know if in like you know there's, but it always comes back to you know doing Brookoil and stuff like that. So I'm not sure when soon would be. I know we had talked about. A little bit a few months ago, but it's just kind of depending on you know when we can get together to decide what we want to do, and if we want to completely, we'd also talk about doing a different approach and just everybody writing it all together, and which we'd started to do that, and that seemed to work really, really well, and so I'm not sure. It's just it may be a slow process, but at this point we're kind of you know, we've kind of been chewed up and spit out by the industry a little bit, so we're just going to do whatever we want to.
Sure.
So it's at our own pace. And,
it's I've had four of the six guys from Urge on, and we've talked in depth about, you know, some of their journey through, you know, the highs and lows and things, but that's basically where they're at now as a band, like where they went in and recorded their, you know, they've recorded their new album on their own and did put it out independently, and like, you know, there's a lot to be said to that, where you're doing what you want to do at your own pace, your own thing, you know, and you know you're in charge and not having to worry about everything else, and
it's definitely a refreshing
yeah.
way to go about it, especially when you've going through somebody telling you, you know, like, do it like this or do it like that. And it's just like, come on.
Right. Well, you're still planning, are there plans for, like, I know it was last June. Was it June when you guys did that show over at Pops?
Mm-hmm.
Which was great, by the way.
Thank you.
Anything like that coming up you guys know? You're talking about?
We are going to be playing some shows. We haven't announced them yet. I don't know if we're allowed to yet.
Oh, yeah, man.
but it looks like it's going to actually have to be end of summer. And then go into the fall. Because it's been a while since we've played. So, and it's, you know, life happens a little bit, you know. One of the guys had to finish up school and wanted to do that and all that. But we are planning on doing something at the end of summer, and it should be pretty big and pretty fun for anybody that's been a fan of us from back in the day and everything like that. So I won't say anything yet, but or what's going on with it. But when we have everything lined up and stuff like that, it should be fun. So get back at it.
I know there's a lot of us that are ready to see you guys back on the stage again.
I'm definitely ready to play.
Yeah. I think I might even have my wife convinced to come. She thinks, compliment or not, I don't know what she'll think, but she thinks you sound like a more rocking version of Brendan Urie. You know, familiar with him?
Panic at the Disco?
Panic at the Disco, yeah.
I guess I could hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a great voice, but first time I ever played her for a few guys, she goes, "Who's that?" And I said, "Oh, it's Purple Row." She's like, "It sounds like Brendan Urie." To me, a compliment. So now when I hear it, I can't help but hear that. So I think I might have convinced her to come to one of your shows just based upon that. So, definitely a good time.
I just had a thought and spaced. My buddy Corey wanted me to ask you about the Fifth Element. He said he wanted to know whatever happened there.
Oh, man. We had a lot of fun, and we recorded two albums, we were making some steam and grabbing some attention, and it was real close, and it just, as things do with the music industry, it just kind of fizzled out. You know, one day they're all interested in you, and the next day they don't want to, you know, won't even answer your phone call, and so it just kind of slowed down a little bit, and then we decided to split, and right after that, I got asked to go sing for some of the guys with the band Evanescence did a side project in Little Rock, and they asked me to come sing for that. So I got a phone call on a Wednesday. I'd withdrawn from school and quit my job, and I'd moved down there by that Friday and started doing that, and came back up, I guess it was 2 months later, and played our first show at Point Fest.
Oh, wow.
That was it. You know, after that, everybody kind of, with the Fifth Element, just decided to kind of go their other ways, and a lot of the boys were down in Little Rock hanging out all the time too.
Sure.
But it's just it wasn't meant to be.
We had Bill Ryder on from The Urge, and he had a similar story about, like, he said he was with another group, and they invited The Urge invited him on to, like, sit in with the horn and or his trombone or sorry no saxophone sorry yeah and Matt plays trombone, and then anyway, played with him, and then, like, he said they were like, "Hey, come on to the next show with us," you know. He's like, "Okay," and he said he called his mom the next day and, like, told me he was quitting school and he's going on the road with the band, and so I was like, "It's just a great rock story." So how'd your family take to the news you quitting school and stuff?
They kind of saw it coming, one way or the other, because there really wasn't anything that was really going to stop that. I think and it got to a point where, I was at school more to not disappoint my parents, because I did that quite a bit. When I told them who it was that had asked me to come sing They were like, okay, if that's what you want to do, you know, go ahead. You know, yeah. So
that's cool. As
it's their fault. They got me the guitar when I was 14. So,
that's gotta be feel good though. At least like, you know, no matter what you're doing, they're supportive behind it, and like, you know, just go out and do it. So.
Had to seize the opportunity.
Yeah, sure.
So,
yeah.
And then that actually led me to end up teching for Evanescence and get out on the road and do all that stuff with them too, which was really fun. And I was a terrible tech, but drum tech, but it was still fun nonetheless to be out there all over the place with my buddies and all that. So
I got
made a lot of connections that way too.
Yeah, I got a buddy from I met. But Isaiah from Show Baby. Show Baby I met through Fivefold. They kind of started trading shows. Show Baby was from South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And but they would come here and they would, you know, like I said, swap shows with Fivefold. But I met Isaiah, and then the bass player from the band, they moved to Nashville. And Isaiah somehow got hooked up with, he's like guitar tech for Little Big Town now.
Oh, really?
So he's on the road.
That's a gig.
Yeah.
that's a real money gig, too.
So he's all over the road. I watch him on it, you know, I follow him on Facebook, and you see him, like, pictures from all over. I think he met Steven Tyler, all the kinds of stuff. He's just, you know, he's living the dream on the road with those guys right now. And I mean, yeah, even though you're not in the band, but just being a part of that thing sometimes is a pretty incredible experience itself. And
yeah, I dug it. I didn't want to be on that side of the back line, but it was definitely cool to do it while I you know, got the chance. You know,
sure. And see some of the world, man.
Yeah, that for me, it got to the point too that we decided actually one of the guys was leaving Evanescence anyway, and the other one got booted, and it was, you know, it's like, well, I'm gonna stay home, and at that point, then I stayed in Little Rock and wrote a lot of the first Brook Royal album, so yeah. I had to come home.
Yeah,
start working on being on the other side of the speakers.
Where did the name Brook Royal? I know it's a cheesy question, but I'm curious. Where did the name Brook Royal come from?
That was a street that we used to in a house that we used to practice in. And it just seemed, we liked it, and checked to see if it had been LLC'd. It had, sweet, so we bought it up, and that's just went with it.
Yeah, we get every now and then, but like me and Chris named the show Rock Paper Podcast because we were trying to think of some kind of reference to '90s or, you know, different things. Whatever, we had a whole list, and then our friends. We put up a list, and our friends voted on this one. They loved it. It was like the clear winner. So we're like, all right, I guess that's it. And then we went on searching the web, making sure there wasn't nothing like it. And so that's how it stuck. And but it's kind of funny what, you know, where the inspiration comes from, some of those names and what sticks. And then like how many bands like Dave Grohl, doesn't he like? Not really a fan of the name Foo Fighters, but it's the what?
Yeah, he's always like, if I picked a band, why the fuck would I have picked Foo Fighters?
Right.
If I knew I was going to be this big, you know, basically.
Yeah, just wrote something on the demo.
It's like what they called, the Japanese called unidentified flying objects or something like that.
Yeah.
Just a total non, you know, like had nothing to do with anything, and now they're one of the biggest bands in the world, and it sticks, and it's, you know.
But you guys ever see that SNL skit? It was like one of those like you know, cartoon one things it did, and then like I remember it was like Mr. T comes in and he like busts in like a Foo Fighters practice or something. He's like, come on, we gotta go fight some foos.
Yeah.
And he's like it was a good one, man. So anyway, every time I think of Foo Fighters, that's what pops in my brain. Like
think about the video with the Futos and how they said that was like one of the biggest mistakes they could have ever done was put Mentos
Big
or Futos or whatever. And
Big
it
knee,
they
the
said
song?
People would just throw those things on the stage and hit them like rocks and just
Futos. All right, man. Well, I guess we'll look to wrap this up. You got anything else you wanna say? Just keep an eye out for some shows this summer?
Yeah, I'll have to find out when we're going to be able to announce it. I know it's going to be at the end of summer. Yeah. And then more coming in the fall.
Yeah.
So as soon as, you know, things are allowed to be said, yeah, it will. But I know we're definitely anxious to get back out there and start playing again, because it's being a musician and not I still play all the time, but just not doing shows. Sure. I mean, that's just that's the whole reason you want to play, is just get out and just be on stage and play your songs and have fun and just be a goofball, which we tend to do almost too much sometimes at shows, but it still makes it fun for up there acting like dorks.
Yeah,
it's because we are
dorks. With some of your best friends, yeah.
Yeah, that's my family. So yeah. I mean, it's, I had to sit in a van with those bums for I don't know how long. So it's nonstop. It's
all right. So yeah, keep an eye out for some shows. And I also wanted to mention May 23rd is Point Fest. If you don't have tickets, you're out of luck. Yeah, it's sold out. But try to find some from
go pay stunt up prices.
Yeah, whatever you gotta do. But anyway, our buddies from the show Hollow Point Heroes will be there on a pop stage, and also friends of the show Apollo's Daughter. So go out and support them. And we got Greek Fire and Shaman's Harvest and The Used, Breaking Benjamin,
Chevelle,
yeah, it's a big lineup. It's gonna be good.
It's gonna be a
song. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Jack, thanks for hanging, man.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you said you wanna. You got when it's over. Is that what you said?
It's already over.
Or is already over?
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll throw that on the end of this show, and go pick up a copy of the record if you haven't. Cycles of Life and Sound on brookroyal.com.
It's on it's on iTunes. You can get everything basically from our Facebook, which is facebook.com/brookroyal. There's links on twitter.com/brookroyal. We're pretty much, if anybody wants to get a hold of us for anything, you can get a hold of us on either one of those. The CD is also for sale at CD Warehouse, so go see Walter. Definitely go pick up a physical copy and support Walter, because that guy's been 100% behind music and local bands for as long as I can remember. So
sure.
He'd appreciate it if you go into his shop. For sure, I know.
Tell him we sent you.
Yes.
And give him some money so he can fix his air conditioner.
All right. Well, that's a wrap, guys. Thanks again.
All right. See ya.
See ya.